And hello, everyone. Welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Salmon.
Peter Wesley Salmon.
Sorry, it's just fancier using your middle name.
We're not getting into the Wesley thing again. I was trying to think of like a girl in the spiderwebs thing, like pun, and then, you know, talking about like denying your birthright, but you are accepting your birthright.
Yeah.
Leave it in. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans, and we are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new cyber action thriller, The Girl in the Spider's Web, a dragon tattoo story. We probably won't use the whole title through the show. But that's in the back half. And for the first half, instead of doing some movie news this week, we're going to instead do another one of our famous lists. The Grinch is another movie that is in wide release from this last weekend. It is the retelling of the classic Dr. Seuss story, which has been already retold in a famous TV special from, I think, the 60s, and then the 2000 Ron Howard movie starring Jim Carrey as the Grinch, and now it's being reanimated, let's say, in a CGI form from the same people who made Despicable Me and Secret Life of Pets.
Illumination
Studios.
I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know. I've seen the trailers. I don't think it looks that great.
No, it's, I mean, there's only so many ways you can tell that story.
He's a great actor. I don't think Benedict Cumberbatch.
The Grinch?
No, well, hey. Hey, the Grinch usually is. I don't know about in this film, though. But I don't know if Benedict Cumberbatch
the Grinch
is really...
delivers.
I don't know if his voice or just how he acts really goes well with the Grinch. He's no Boris Karloff or, even more so, Jim Carrey. We got to admit for the Grinch. Like, those two do fit better. I don't know. We'll find out. Maybe it could be the best one.
Yeah, and the Grinch really screwed the pooch in his Merchant of Venice revival. no, it's... I saw the trailer for that, and I was not... Mm-hmm. I didn't want to run out to the studio or run out to the theater to check it out, which makes me sad because I always watch the original cartoon.
Yeah, I love the original.
The Chuck Jones animation. And, you know, it kind of reminds you that, you know, for, I guess, people of a certain age... I would be one of them, you know, who grew up with cell animation, traditional 2D animation, hand painted, and all that. It's, you know, there's no topping that. But so, you know, leaving that aside, we decided to do like our top five computer animated movies. And so Toy Story was, you know, kicked this off in 1995. Mm-hmm. It was the first feature length computer animated movie. There's kind of been no looking back since then. I don't think, unless
no,
it's...
No, there'll never be anything better than Toy Story.
Well, I was also going to say that, you know, there's... Unless it comes from, like, a passion project, like somebody working on something for, like, 5-10 years, because it's a small crew of, like, 30 people hand-painting 24 cells a minute. It's, you know, or 24 cells a second. It's... We're never probably going to see that art form.
No. No, it's the iconic CGI film. It's the first one that made it, you know, boom.
Right, exactly. So we're going to talk about our top fives, and so Peter, we will start with you.
All right. I think I've already talked about this before, but I picked Inside Out. I think in the past couple of years, it is just remarkable. I think it's one of the best Disney Pixar has done. I don't want to say since Toy Story. I gotta think more in between that, but it's one of the best in a while. Better than Coco, in my opinion, and definitely, and I mean offense by this, way better than The Good Dinosaur. That was just, that was not Disney Pixar. But Inside Out also, you know, this is the University of Guelph, like, psychology is pretty big here, and it's just amazing how accurate it is when it comes to, you know, like, puberty, mental illnesses, just... you know, kid, youth, imagination, just everything that has to do within your brain. And they had, you know, psychologists work on it and, you know, some neurologists work on it. So, you know, the actual frame inside the brain is pretty accurate, but made for kids to understand it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a science guy, so it made me understand my brain a bit more, too. that and just the voice acting. It was Lewis Black. That was the thing. I hadn't heard that guy's voice since his MTV, not MTV, Jeepers, Comedy Central show, right? I forget what it was called. But just hearing his voice again was really just made me a happy man.
He still pops up on The Daily Show from
Does he? Okay. But yeah, it was just great hearing his voice. Bill Hader and, as the father, Kyle MacLachlan. So yeah, it's just all around the voice acting, the quality, and who they had, like I said, psychologists working on it with them. It just shows how much work Disney Pixar can put into films and what they can accomplish through that.
You forgot Amy Poehler as Joy.
Oh, as the main character. Yeah, yes. No, I love Amy Poehler.
I can't remember her name off the top of my head. Phyllis Smith as Sadness.
Yeah, right,
yeah,
right.
So, who is Phyllis Smith, who is Phyllis in The Office. Yeah, that's a good pick. I think that's probably one of, I think that's, if it's not one of the best Pixar ever, it's definitely one of the best Pixars in the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Okay, so for my number five, I chose the Peanuts movie.
Oh, good call.
Yeah, which was from Fox and Blue Sky. And Blue Sky did, like, the Robots movies and does the Ice Age movies. I like Peanuts, though, because of it's a CGI movie, but it looks like just a bit of fancier cell animation.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of really blurs the line because, like, in one scene, you're like, oh, it's CG. And then the other scene, like, did
more
they
2D.
Draw this? Yeah, it's really, like, incredible how they were able to evoke the feeling of those old TV specials and still, like, manage to update the style so that, you know, you have to be sort of paying careful attention to, you know, really see that this is, like, a... you know, an update of a classic, and the Schultz family was heavily involved in its creation. We're overseeing it, so you know, it has the feel of an old Peanuts special. I mean, it doesn't, like, really shake up the formula. It feels like a bunch of, because it's a year in the life of Charlie Brown, but it ties a bunch of sort of different stories together in this sort of one narrative. But it's, like, it's really, really well done. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it far more than I thought I would.
I got to check it out then, because I love Peanuts. And I didn't watch it just because it was CGI. I thought it would be too different.
No, it's I mean, it's different, but...
Like you said,
it's lovingly sort of crafted. It doesn't feel like it was
perfect for everybody.
Put through, like, it doesn't feel like it went through a machine. It felt like it was lovingly, like... drawn, like, by one and one zero at a time, if that's sort of a thing. It's not, but the music in it was great, the voices, it was an all kid voice cast as the characters. And I mean, even the point where it does sort of get, like, flagrantly CGI, it's like at just the right, like when doing the Snoopy Red Baron bits.
Oh yeah, that would work.
I mean, that's when it sort of they take the gloves off and, like, let's have some fun with this. And yeah, it's. I think it's a really special movie, and I think it got overlooked when it came out a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's move on to numero cuatro.
All right, I picked 2002's Ice Age.
Mm-hmm.
I partially picked it because of good old John Leguizamo.
Yeah.
And we got, what, John Wick 3 coming out soon?
Yeah.
So I know he's not the main character, but he's in it. He's the reason I've continued watching them. That, and I am rewatching Everybody Loves Raymond right now because of good old Crave TV, if you're listening. Buy Crave TV. No, and I think just Ice Age is just so much fun. It's one of the ones that really started to focus immensely on comedy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like Toy Story, the other ones. You know, they're funny, but they did try to, you know, put a little sprinkles of, you know, drama. This is supposed to mean something to you, the viewer, right? And, you know, Ice Age, I guess, maybe has some of that. But mainly, it's just fun. Just that squirrel by itself is a whole... he's hilarious. And, you know, I did learn a bit about...
The Ice Age?
Yeah, the Ice Age, I guess. What the humans were up to, I guess, during the Ice Age or during that era.
Yeah.
It came around at the same time as that, what, 10,000 BC film? I think Ice Age was more accurate than that film. But mainly,
you think
mainly,
so?
Mainly, well, no, probably not, but I prefer it, so I'm supporting it. Ice Age. It's just great.
You know what I love about
it? I'm also a winter guy.
Yeah.
So, you know,
I hear you.
It's got that vibe to it.
Well, it's a good day for that pick. You know what I love about 10,000 BC? Like the god people who are, like, building the pyramids.
Yeah.
And just, like, how unsubtly we're meant to understand they're, like, Atlantis refugees. Like, Roland Emmerich really pounds that home.
Yeah. Like watching the History Channel at like 2 a.m. would be more accurate about that, what they're trying to say the pyramids were.
Yeah, it's like Ancient Aliens, the movie. Yeah. It's, yeah. Ice Age is fun.
It's fun, exactly.
Like this, the little squirrel bits, they sort of work on their own as little shorts. And that was one of the fun things about that initially was they would just put the trailer, the
squirrel chasing the nuts. They were comedic shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I thought that was also a nice step forward.
Of course, by the time like he's in space and aliens.
Oh, it goes too far. Yeah, but Ice Age 1. I'd say just Ice Age 1.
All right.
I didn't watch the second one.
Yeah, it's like, I guess it's like the Halloween movies, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe they'll come back in like 40 years and like all the rest of the Ice Age movies. Are just
I think there might still be Disney shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. My number four is Lego Movie.
Ooh, good call.
Which like should not be a movie in a way because it's just like here's an hour and a half of Lego promotion. But it's actually like really deep in terms of talking about imagination and the power of play and, you know, not like, even though Lego has basically become about like theme sets, like here's the Harry Potter Lego, here's the Star Wars Lego, here's the Marvel Lego, the underlying theme of this movie is like, don't like put yourself into boxes. Things don't have to be a certain way.
Yeah.
And
I'm glad Lego is reminding the viewers about that.
Well, Phil Lord and Chris Miller were. I'm not sure Lego
is. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, certainly they're coming at it from the point of view that, you know, Lego used to be this imaginative thing where you get a big box of 500 bricks and you can make whatever the heck you wanted. And that's sort of the key, you know, it's almost like the whole concept of this, the Lego movie, it's this corporate thing where it's a big blockbuster movie backed by a big studio named after a big toy. I mean, there's like levels of corporatism to this, and then to like to crunch it all down into like a very essentially sort of anti-corporate message of like imagination and fair play and that kind of thing. And the way like things are like sort of weaved into it, like the Duplo and the Crackle and what that means, and you know, business, you know. I can't remember the Will Ferrell villain and how it ends up being modeled after the dad when it goes into the real life segments. It's really, really well done. And that song, Everything is Awesome, is like, it's so catchy.
But it's been stuck in my head since watching it.
Yeah. And it's got a great voice cast.
Oh, yeah.
And it works in like things like Batman, like so beautifully. And like,
well, and that led to the Lego Movie sequel, spinoff.
And yeah, the Lego Batman movie,
which was actually enjoyable too. Not as good, but I thought it was okay.
I think it falls apart in the middle, but
yeah,
no pun intended. But yeah, so but you know, here's another, you know, they are coming out with a Lego Movie 2. We'll see what happens there. Lord and Miller, I don't think, are involved in that one. But you know, in terms of like, just like the end product, you know, the expectations where you're like, oh, it's a Lego movie, like, oh, it's just here to make money. But it, you know, they actually turned it into like a fairly interesting and sort of deeply messaged movie that is still very entertaining and very catchy with lots of great characters and lots of great sequences. It's something else. And
I was very impressed.
So was I.
When I saw the trailers for it, I viewed it as troll dolls.
One
of the ones I assumed would be awful and get horrendous reviews, but then actually was surprisingly successful.
All right, number three.
I picked, just because it's different, it wasn't, well, I kind of liked it, I picked Beowulf. A kind of mixture of CGI and real life animation. I thought that was cool, and I, you know, because of that, maybe GTA 5, you know, and those games wouldn't be doing it in the same way, where it is a mixture of all, you know, full animation, but still green suits, people doing, you know, the real life actions, and just makes it look more real. For this one, I don't know about that, but it made it look more like an artistic attempt. That and just the visuals in general were great, I thought, and really matched well with the mythology that it's going for. And Anthony Hopkins, Malkovich.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are
probably... Ray Winstone was Beowulf.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't too sure who Ray Winstone was, but yeah, he did a great job on that.
And Angelina Jolie.
I was literally just about to say, yeah, Angelina Jolie, who's great in it too. I really do. I she genuinely in that film scares me.
Yeah.
The part where he goes underground and you see her, it's just, yeah, it's spooky.
That's part of her scary phase along with Maleficent.
Yeah.
It was...
I guess it just impressed me that it was a new attempt, but even though it was a bit too artistic and a little weird, it didn't, you know, stay through. We don't really use that kind of animation. But it was, I thought it was cool looking. I thought it was interesting. And I thought the film just by itself too was well enough made to be able to enjoy it.
I think of this, like the Zemeckis trilogy of like Polar Express, Beowulf,
yes,
and Christmas
right.
Carol. Mm-hmm. I think Beowulf is probably the best one.
Beowulf is the best of the three, yeah. I also just like Robert Zemeckis. He loves his films and the plot line and the quality of them are cool. But I do like him playing around with the special effects and things like that.
My number three is a bit different. It's Frozen. Which is, you know, you can still see Frozen merchandise absolutely everywhere. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it shows like the staying power of this thing that came out 5 years ago, and it was 5 years ago it came out. But it's like the first sort of movie, like since Disney made the conversion to CGI that actually captured the old Disney spirit.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, the old, like the song and dance and fun and adventure and princesses, and it's able to do it, able to like, establish new ground, but at the same time it doesn't lose any of that Disney feeling. And you know, of course, talking about music, like Let It Go, that's another song that just gets stuck in your head.
And I've never seen it, and that song's in my head.
But you know, every little girl you knew was like singing it at the top of her lungs. They just loved the heck out of it, and they loved, you know, Ilsa, and they loved Olaf the snowman, and you know, it just
He's lovable. He was in the short opening up for one of the Disney Pixars I saw. I think Coco or something.
Yeah, I think so.
It was really great.
Yeah.
Funny man.
And, you know, it's also transferable. Like, one of the seasons of Once Upon a Time had the Frozen characters in it. So, I mean, it just, like, somehow managed to replicate that old Disney magic in a really fun and new and unique way. And you know, of course, there's Frozen 2 on the way. Which I'm not sure how they can
Kristen Bell in general is just booming.
It is the Kristen Bellissance. With The Good Place and Veronica Mars coming back,
which is awesome.
And so it's just all around great Disney fun. And it's I think it'll have staying power.
It's gonna be memorable for sure.
It's
already been half a decade,
right?
Yeah,
but I mean, what I find interesting is just, you know, Disney in this era, whether it's Big Hero 6, whether it's Utopia, whether it's Frozen, you know, they keep trying these new and different things. Some of them are successful, but Frozen is like the only one that's able to capture that old school Disney magic. And I think in 50 years, you will still see women wandering around Disney World and as Ilsa.
Oh, 100%.
Well, you see like people dressed up as like the bunny in Zootopia wandering around. That's debatable, but I think the Frozen will stick.
Yeah, I doubt Zootopia.
All right.
No offense, Zootopia.
No offense to Zootopia.
All right,
Number two.
Yeah. This list for me, I was excluding Disney Pixar's because, you know, we were basing it off of going from
Toy Story. Except your first one.
Well, I can't exclude Inside Out. It's great. So I picked one that I enjoyed as a kid. I don't know if I would maintain enjoying it, but I picked Monster House.
Yeah.
And it was quite enjoyable. And I checked the reviews yesterday, and it was way better than I thought.
I forgot about Monster House.
Yeah, it was for kids, but I was genuinely a little spooked out. And just the visuals of the Monster House were done great. And I also think it's a good example of how, I don't know about picky, but I'm always curious about how on purpose the people making these films are picking the voice actors.
Mm.
Because they always kind of mesh together, and it's like, is there a specific father or, you know, type of mother they're trying to get their kids to bring it? Because this one's got Kevin James.
Mm-hmm.
Go Kevin James. It's got the Nick Cannon. It's got Jason Lee. Right? It's got Buscemi.
That's the old man, yeah.
Yeah, I think the director was maybe hoping for some Generation X or something, stoner parents, you know, to bring them. Or just some huge Happy Madison or MTV Nick Cannon fans to bring their kids, you know?
Yeah.
And my parents aren't like that, but luckily they still brought me, and I as a kid loved it. I also love Nick Cannon and Kevin James, and that could be because of it.
Yeah, no, it's true.
Like, yeah, but without the voice actors, I do want to say, if you're a kid, it is great.
Yeah, it's like...
House is a character in its own right, which is quite interesting and very well done. And yeah, Buscemi is remarkable.
It's the bridge from like Goonies to like Stranger Things.
Yeah.
Because it's got that vibe, that kind of 80s Spielberg vibe.
Yep.
So it's a lot of fun. And Gil Keenan went on to make... He went on to do live action. He did the Poltergeist remake, speaking of 80s Spielberg.
Oh, did he? Okay.
But he also did City of Ember, which is a kid's movie I like a lot.
Oh, okay.
So it's, you know, he's got talent. And
yeah. Monster I wish House his films were more remembered. That's another reason why I just wanted Monster House. It's probably available somewhere.
Oh, it's on DVD for sure.
Exactly.
Because I come to think of it, I have it on DVD. But check it out for sure. It's a great Halloween movie too. Although I think it came out in the summer. My number two is How to Train Your Dragon, which came out I think in 2010. So like right at the beginning of sort of like the CGI or not the CGI boom, the 3D boom. And this is like one of the few 3D films I can really think of where it, like the 3D actually enhances it. Like a lot of the aerial scenes, especially the big fight between the good dragons and the bad dragons at the end. Somehow DreamWorks was able to take it further in the sequel. Like the sequel is like sort of, not to say that the original How to Train Your Dragons, it looks dated, but it's, They clearly massage the technology a bit more to like take it to the next level for How You Train Your Dragons in part two. So it's like really beautiful to watch. It has this epic scope, this epic feeling. It's got Vikings. It's more earnest and sort of, I want to say, dramatic or like emotional. Like it's not like a lot of the DreamWorks movies, because DreamWorks is the studio that has the Shrek movies and the Kung Fu Panda movies.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is like just tongue-in-cheek kind of meta humor.
Just fun for kids.
Not
aiming for an in-depth analysis of the emotions. And...
Right. It's you know, but, you know, this is How to Train Your Dragons was like a very different direction from the sort of trademark they had established. And it was also, I mean, what DreamWorks did with Shrek and the other movies had an influence over everyone else, including Disney. It's like the Madagascar movies too are also theirs. So it's, you know, it's very much had an influence over the whole industry. So I wonder if this was like at a point where maybe Jeffrey Katzenberg or somebody else at DreamWorks was like looking at what they had wrought and thought, like, we need to take a step back and maybe reconsider. And I'm glad they did, because How to Train Your Dragons is a lot of fun. It's very earnest. Mm-hmm. It's got a great story in the core, great relationship between Hiccup, who's the...
And it's still quite remembered, too.
Yeah. And
well, I think it's probably got a sequel coming out, a third one, fourth one.
Yeah, next year. It's coming out next year, I think. But yeah, the relationship between Hiccup and his dragon Toothless, it's a great message to kids about, you know, not hating things that are different from you. And also like the side cast too, like Gerard Butler plays Hiccup's dad.
Yeah, there's a lot of surprises.
And David Tennant is like his second in command. So that's a great team up. I'd love to see like a buddy cop movie with Gerard Butler and David Tennant sometime.
Well, what if it's like a spinoff of Frozen? With their two characters? I haven't seen it. Would their two characters in it work that way?
That's maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, we have talking snowmen in the one and dragons. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some room to...
I feel also... This is just a theory, and I got so much for it because I am excited for it. I'm curious if Frozen and this will have kind of mini TV shows or something like that on the Disney streaming.
Well...
Like, I know, obviously, we'll probably be able to watch those films, but I'm curious if they'll do, like, you know, little spinoff TV shows of it or whatever. You go on the, Disney Channel right now, and there is, you know, Penguins of Madagascar show and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if it was on the Disney streaming, that'd be more of a high quality, and that could be fun.
I kind of hate those penguins, but that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I know, that's why I was saying it could be better than that. Although the film I enjoyed.
I think the penguins are like the Minions, where it's like... A little bit is okay, but when you're doing a whole Penguins movie or a whole Minions movie...
It's too much.
Okay, here's the thing about the Minions movie. Because it goes about like how they... Like, we're at the beginning of time, we're like henchmen to bad people. And then after they were working for Napoleon, they go into exile until the 1960s. And you think to yourself, I wonder what they were trying to do there, because what evil person would Minions work with in, like, I don't know, say, the 1930s?
Yeah. Oh, I never even thought about that.
Yeah. So good dodge there, Illumination.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get to number one.
Illumination. Yeah, number one for me. This also, I just want to say, this was not like, you know, favorite to least favorite or least favorite to favorite. This is just random picks for me.
All right.
Kind of in a flow. I picked Ants.
Oh, okay.
Because it was, well, it wasn't one of the first ones I watched, but it was, it was 98, so I was about four. It's one of the first ones that I have specific memories of, and I couldn't finish it. Because about halfway through, there's an individual who, this was like over 10 years ago, I'm going to say it, a character dies in it, an ant dies, and I couldn't handle it. I love that ant so much, and I just couldn't handle it. And I think it was Stallone's character, Sylvester Stallone's. Also, Angelina Jolie, she's, oh, no, I put J-Lo, sorry. Jennifer Lopez is also in this one. And it's also, like Monster House, I think it's a fun analyzation of which parents they're trying to get to bring their kids to see us. Because this one, main characters, we got Woody Allen.
Mm-hmm.
We got Dan Aykroyd, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe they're like trying to get some more artsy parents to bring their kids, or some more, you know, higher class, or people who are pretentious and think they're higher class when it comes to media.
Right.
So yeah, I thought it was just an interesting thing to look at.
This is one of those twin situations where I think Ants and A Bug's Life came out in the same year.
Really? Ooh, yeah. Competition. Bug's Life, I just want to say, was better. Right. Ants is enjoyable. But
of course, both movies are kind of scarred now because you have Woody Allen and Ants, and you have Kevin Spacey in A Bug's Life.
Yeah.
So it's tricky.
No, I don't know. Okay. Kevin Spacey for which one?
Bug's Life.
For A Bug's Life.
He was the grasshopper in A Bug's Life.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I never thought about that. Well, yeah. But Ants also, just like Monster House, is a higher quality than I expected when going into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I was a kid, I think even if I watched it right now as an adult, I wouldn't stop watching it, but I'd tear up at the, you know, Sylvester Stallone leaving us.
That was a big one in terms of the voice cast they recruited. And Ants, Bug's Life, and B-Movie make a great trilogy.
Yeah.
maybe not. My number one is a Pixar movie. It is Up. I think it is peak Pixar.
I was thinking it.
The opening 5 minutes when it goes through Carl's life, like from when he meets Ellie, who grows up, and they get married and they have a miscarriage and she can't have kids, so they start saving up for this adventure, and then she gets sick and she dies and he lives in the house alone, and it makes you cry. And this is in the first 5 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, at least for Ants, I got to wait halfway through.
and then we go off on this zany adventure with flying houses and talking dogs and stupid birds, and It's just like a testament to the storytelling power of Pixar. Mm-hmm. Like what they, we talked about how people were emulating DreamWorks, and it's because the other player on the scene, Pixar, what they do can't be emulated because it's like just from the ground up, the team they put together, the way they break stories, the way they put movies together. You just can't emulate that unless you are on the inside. And Up is, you know, there's like this trinity of Wall-E, Up, and Toy Story 3, where I think that was like the hat trick. That was like peak Pixar, where the creativity and the artistry was firing on all cylinders, that it just went bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And then we get to Brave, and then we get into Monsters University, and we're going back to Cars for some reason.
Was Brave Disney Pixar?
Yeah.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
So, yeah, I mean, and they sort of pick things up again with Inside Out, but I mean, as you said, like there's also The Good Dinosaur, and there's also Cars again, and
Cars 3.
So it's just like any Wall-E, Up, or Toy Story 3 could have like taken this spot for me. Like Toy Story 3, the magic of Toy Story 3 is that it made me believe they were going to kill those toys.
Yeah, me too.
I thought
they better not. Toy Story 4.
I was sitting there watching it. And they're like heading towards the furnace, and they all start holding hands. And I was like, I literally had my hands over my eyes. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy F, they're going to kill these toys.
Yeah, it was a great two original ones, and then a perfect little conclusion with
I mean, it also makes me sad they're making a Toy Story 4 now,
because it was a perfect conclusion.
It was a perfect conclusion.
That's what I've thought of too.
Passing of the torch to the new kid and Andy handing his toys off. It was beautiful.
And if it gets below 99%, then it's worse than the other three, right? Like
Exactly. They've already There's no way everything. It can't be a failure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Better not be.
But Up, you know, Up has its charms. It has a great old man fight between Ed Asner and Christopher Plummer, even though they're not fighting. The characters are voicing.
He's a very funny dog.
The dog character, Doug, is great. There's a great relationship between the Boy Scout
and
the old man. It's touching. You know, there's great lessons about, you know, public service and going on adventures and, you know, not letting, you know, your elders feel like they're alone, and you're never too old to go on a new adventure.
And whether it be the guy in Up or your neighbor, old Steve Buscemi from Monster House, just be nice to your senior neighbor.
Be nice, yeah. If you didn't learn that from Home Alone, learn it from these
movies. Yeah, exactly.
You never know when you need an old man to smack a burglar in the face with a shovel, is what I'm saying. Speaking of lessons, this week and next week is Raise Your Voice here on CFRU. We are trying to raise $5,000 for our mobile community studio so we can keep that going and provide a space for marginalized groups around Guelph so that they can tell their stories on the air and have access to radio and media production in their communities. To find out more, go to cfru.ca/donations. And you can donate any amount you feel like you would be comfortable with. But I will add that if you give $25 to the studio, you will be able to enter a raffle for a number of really great prizes. And I will list off some of them. You can get a membership to 10C. There is 2 Hillside Festival passes up for raffle. An artist-curated record pack from Royal Cat Records. There are 2 crony passes for Kazoo Fest. There are tickets to the Borealis Music Series and lots of other prizes. So if you want to give $25 to the studio, you will be able to enter a raffle for that. Plus, you'll get your choice of a toque or a mug or a t-shirt or something. And we would really appreciate any and all donations you would like to give to keep the mobile studio going. And I know it's a big success at the schools. When they go out to the schools, kids love radio. Don't laugh.
Oh, no, they do.
Should see them at Brand Avenue Public School. They love the mobile studio. So for more details, go to cfru.ca/donations. And you can do that while we play the music. And then we're going to get right into our review of The Girl in the Spider's Web. And there's only one song to cue up for that. At least, I think so. Anyway, you're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
You have a sister?
No. She killed herself 3 years ago.
I can't believe you didn't tell me.
That I had a sister or that she killed herself?
Both. When our loved ones die, we tell our friends.
We have to go now. I need to work.
If you have another girl coming, you can tell me.
I have to work.
You're going to doubt Lisbeth Salander when she says she has to work? Come on. That was a clip from The Girl in the Spider's Web. It is the new film from Fede Alvarez. And it stars Claire Foy, Sylvia Hooks, Lakeith Stanfield, Sevier Gunnarsson, and Stephen Merchant. It is based on the, I want to say, 4th book of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo franchise.
The posthumous one.
Yeah, it's the first one after Stieg Leeson, who wrote the first 3. He passed away in 2004. actually before the books were even published, mm-hmm. and his estate has his, I guess, plans for this subsequent 7 books. He was planning a 10-book series, and they've released 2 since his death, including The Girl in the Spider's Web, which I didn't know till I was, like, doing research about this movie that I knew he died, but I didn't know they were still cranking them out, like, yeah. Tupac records, but...
Yeah, that's a good example.
But I am admittedly disappointed by this.
The film?
The film.
Oh, the film. I don't know if I was disappointed. I wasn't expecting much, but yeah, no, it wasn't that great. I'm not a huge fan of the David Fincher's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but it is objectively of a higher quality than this one.
As compared to the Swedish version, no, but there were touches like the Karen O cover of Immigrant Song, which was, you know, arranged by Atticus Ross and Trent Reznor. Where it just, like, jet propults you into the movie. It is just, like, this concussive thing. That and like the visuals of the opening too, with all, like, the black goo and the computer cables and
just the Stellan Skarsgård scenes are perfectly.
That was the other thing scary. I was going to get to, because when he takes Blomkvist at the end, mm-hmm. and he's playing Sail Away as he's, like, getting ready to kill him, that is legitimately messed up, and it'll never make you listen to that song in the same way. I think it's perfectly innocuous, like, Euro trash mm-hmm. song.
Yeah, I still always think of Carpenter in it, but yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it was a great cast, because you had Robin Wright, you had Christopher Plummer, who else was in it? Well, Daniel Craig was in it. And that was, I mean, this is kind of my biggest bugaboo. I didn't think they were going to deal with Blomkvist, because he's kind of like the least interesting part of this. And in Spider's Web, he's really not interesting at all.
No,
he has no, like, the actor.
Right. Well, we just see him in the kind of beginning, Goodnison, right?
Yeah, well, he keeps popping up.
Yeah.
But this I've never heard of this. I mean, he sounds like he's a European actor, obviously, so you probably wouldn't recognize him for much. But Goodnison, he has zero chemistry at all with Claire Foy.
Oh, you were talking about, okay, yes, him.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the father of the main character. No, this guy, what's his character's name? Michael Blomkvist?
Mikhail.
Yeah, he is horrendous as a character.
Yeah.
Well,
having Daniel Craig play him in the Fincher remake.
Yeah.
Because Daniel Craig, like, has this face where it's like he's seen some things. And, you know, even when he's, you know, not, in a not great movie, he's interesting to watch. Mm-hmm. But he looks haunted, like, everything.
This guy's just a regular old dude. He's just boring, like, journalist.
He's just this aggro hipster
guy.
Exactly.
And
it's just like, no thanks. It's like, why would she be interested in him? Yeah. And because he's clearly, you know...
And nothing happens. Absolutely nothing.
No, nothing happens. No, it's lame. I feel like he steals attention away from much more interesting characters, like the Lakeith Stanfield character. Mm-hmm. Or it steals time from when we could have explored the relationship between Lisbeth and her sister Camilla, because that seems to be...
I would have preferred way more Camilla.
Oh, yeah.
I thought she was great.
You know who that actress is, right?
No.
Sylvia Hooks, who was Love in Blade Runner 2049.
Okay. I knew it was, she was in Blade Runner 2049, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, she's just got such a distinct look that can be used for, really freaky out.
Yeah. No, she was great, and it just seems, but, you know, there's...
She could have been the main villain, and she could have been prominent throughout more of it.
She should have been more prominent, because it is about... No,
it's about her and the main character.
Right. And it's like kind of like the Spectre thing, where it's like, I am the author of all your pain. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, let's see some authoring of the pain. And instead, it's like this thing that's an undercurrent through 2/3 of the movie, and then it becomes important in the last third. And by then, it's like, well, we've already jumped through all these hoops of this computer program that's going to kill the world again. And,
which was silly.
You know, who's, like, the spiders, which is this, like, you know, group of Lisbeth's father.
Yeah, but I don't even think they delve deeply enough into the spiders.
No.
It's spiders is in the title, and they still dealt with her dragon tattoo immensely more. And they don't even ever fully explain the spider's webs.
They don't explain like, they don't what they're about. Like, at all. Yeah, they're like a criminal group, but like, why are they dabbling in, you know, like computer codes that launch nukes or whatever?
I'm not saying they need to explain every small little detail, but explain something. Just explain one little thing.
Well, yeah, it's... There's so much going on with the merchant character who hires Lisbeth to steal his program back.
He is in it way less than I expected, though.
Yeah, he's kind of wasted too. Yes.
And they don't explain why his son's with him, really. They I guess that's okay. They infer it's because his son is a genius.
The key to the key, opening of the program.
But why is he such a genius? Does he have a power? Like, I don't. Is he just...
Does he have a power?
Does he got that little The Good Doctor vibe? I didn't fully understand
I think that's kind of implied. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like they took a bunch of ingredients from other movies and just sort of like threw them all together. Yeah. And I know it's like based on a book, but like this gives me no desire to like seek out. I mean, not that I really had a desire to seek out the Dragon Tattoo books and sit down and read them.
I've always been curious, but yeah, no, this there's other books.
There's other books. That's a great ringing endorsement.
Yeah, well,
yeah, there's so much potential here, and
because there's some fun things in it.
Claire Foy is fierce.
Oh, she is.
And she is such a talent and such an obvious talent. And you were saying you hadn't seen her in anything.
No, and I thought she was great in this. I thought she was just as good as the character as in The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Who plays her in Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
Which one?
The American one, the David Fincher one.
Mara Rooney.
Yeah.
Played her.
Yeah, see, I thought this...
No, it wasn't Rooney Mara. Got that backwards. Yeah.
I thought this actress was... I don't know if the way they wrote her character was just as good, but her performance of the character was just as good. Mm-hmm. I think she could even be better if they had written in more. I think maybe they could have gone a bit more in-depth into her. I know part of her shtick is that she's got a lot bottled up, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't really delve anywhere into that. The closest was near the end when she has sort of a back and forth with her sister.
Right.
But other than that, but she is a great actor, like, or just through her gaze and especially her actions, like what she does when she's angry. Yeah, she's great. She's a great representation of the character. They could have written in some better things for her, though.
Yeah, the thing I find with both Fincher's Dragon Tattoo and this is that the Americanized versions, I think... really sand off her rough edges.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've only seen the Dragon Tattoo, the Swedish one, and they made three Swedish ones, but I only saw the first one with Noomi Rapace as Lisbeth Salander. And that Lisbeth Salander kind of makes no apologies. I found the Rooney Mara one, like, kind of... She's much more... I guess sentimental. Mm-hmm. Than
she's a better person.
Yeah, and like she kind of like develops feelings for Blomqvist, and I've never, at least when you go back to watch the Swedish one, you don't really get that impression, like that he's like a tool to her. He's another like little all the feelings are kind of on his side.
Mm-hmm. Well, because she's also gay, and she's open about being gay.
Yeah, well, at the very least, she's bi with, like, heavily.
Or pansexual, who knows, but yeah.
Yeah, we don't...
It's
binary
weird, yeah.
Things about sexuality, but that's the other thing.
There is no relationship with that guy in this film, like, at all.
No, although, again, it's kind of like...
It's implied, but in such a faint way.
It's...
He just looks like he's in the friend zone. That's what I was thinking the whole time.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah, he's... I mean, that's the thing about Blomqvist is that he is in the friend zone. But we're meant to believe that there's this kind of sexual tension between them. And I don't believe it at all.
Yeah, me neither.
Because
it wouldn't work.
There's like nothing remotely interesting about this skinny dweeb who like is like pounding in his office about having to sell his magazine.
His girlfriend.
Well, I think she's his ex-wife, actually.
Well, that's... I don't know if that's better or worse, but yeah, it's... Not nice to her.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that we're meant to, like, it's meant to believe this guy has, you know, his ex-wife, who's actually technically married to someone else, though he still sleeps with her.
And, yeah, they don't delve into
then
that.
On the other side, he has Elizabeth Salander, who's, into him, supposedly. But, I mean, getting back to the character, I feel like Elizabeth is someone who, because of her background, and it should have delved into this more in the movie, considering what the movie's technically about her backstory, is in the Swedish films. It's like she doesn't need anyone. She doesn't want anyone. She will follow these like cases. Like maybe her curiosity gets up, and maybe she'll help Blomqvist because it's an interesting story, and she can do some good. But it's not like she needs to atone for anything.
No.
And I feel like...
No, honestly, she does not need to atone. Everybody that she killed, I am not pro capital punishment, but I do think, even in real life, I'd be okay with them not living anymore.
Right. Right. But it's not like... It's not even that. It's like she makes no apologies to anyone. Mm. And instead of sort of leaning into that more... The movie sort of, it seems like the movie's telling her, it's like, no, you really should be apologizing. It's no. Like, you really are kind of a...
Yeah. Well, and that's also why they could have that journalist we've been talking about in it so much. They are hoping for it to succeed, and then maybe from there can make it more of a classic action kind of blockbuster.
That's
they
the thing.
They do end up together, stuff like that.
That's the thing. It's like, I read reviews where they were saying, like, they've basically taken Elizabeth Salander and made her James Bond, and I was like, oh, it can't be that bad. And it's like, well, it's basically
yeah,
what
it
they
is
do.
Like that. She's a bit more messed up than James Bond, and she is a great actor in it. It's just there could have been so much more,
right?
Putting through her character,
right? It's the thing I find is that it really kind of wants to make her like an action hero.
Mm-hmm. And but you can't fully do that with this kind of film.
Like, it's about her, like, kind of saving the world. And it's like, you go back to the Larson novels and the original
She could be,
material.
Like, a Punisher equivalent or, like, the Daredevil or something.
It's not even, it's not even that, like, sort of grounded. It's just sort of, like, it's kind of like Law and Order. It's kind of, like, ripped from the headlines,
yeah.
That kind of thing. It's, like, about sex trafficking and about... government, corruption, and it's not about like here's a computer program that can manually control all the nuclear weapons around the world. And so for some reason the Swedish Secret Service is like hardcore trying to get their hands on it.
Yeah, that just does not seem believable at all.
The Swedish Secret
Service? No, it would have made more sense, the Chinese, Russians, Americans,
right?
Anybody.
And,
I don't know though. I've never been. Maybe they got something going.
Maybe the
what are you planning?
Maybe they're just that hardcore. We've been ignoring them this whole time and laughing because it's Sweden. But no, it's not. They're trying to make a round hole fit a square peg, or however that works. They seem to not understand what was interesting about the character. And this like terrible world she comes from, and understand like her rationale for being who she is and doing what she does, and it's like that's not big enough. We have this franchise with this franchise potential and this cool character, and her just like going around and punishing bad men. That's not good enough. She has to save the world.
Yeah, and that wasn't needed.
No,
not at all. Like that whole Stephen Merchant thing was. The basic plot, and I don't really think it was needed. And we haven't even talked about him yet. The American FBI guy that was just there.
Oh yeah, Lucky
helping
Stanfield.
Out.
Yeah,
yeah.
Although
these things that formed the plot didn't even feel like they were in it. I would have preferred if it was just her, revenging her father and the sister thing. I didn't need all this little weird.
Although I would have liked more Lakeith Stanfield, because it's like it seems like he could have been like an American Elizabeth Salander.
Yeah, I think if it continues on, he will be more centric. But he also,
but he sold out and went to the NSA, and
well, and he doesn't get what he wanted either. There's no conclusion.
No.
In this at all.
It's yeah. What happens to him at the end? It's kind of
he
bizarre.
Literally just realized that he got screwed
he's just
over.
Like, oh well, guess
yeah.
I'll
he
go
says, "Oh well," because I respect what she did. And
yeah. I guess that's guess
nothing
it's
happens
back.
With him. Nothing happens with the journalist.
I do like
nothing happens with Stephen Merchant.
That kind of ticked me off. What Blomqvist at the end, what he does, but what I liked about
yes, that is so, the very last shot is so annoying.
Yeah, I did like following Lakeith Stanfield around, like when like the Swedish Secret Service like basically like treating him like garbage, because usually in these things you see the deference to the American agent, but there's like a scene where he's at like a crime scene and the Secret Service agent comes out and is like, arrest him, send him back to Disneyland. I laugh so hard at that, because it just you know, that stuff was funny. And the airport scene where she springs him from custody too,
well, that was enjoyable.
I liked a lot. That was a fun sequence.
That's the thing. There was, every once in a while, there's also just some solo, the main character's doing some effed up things is fun. There's the one, like, billionaire, and he has accidentally killed, I think, prostitutes and things like that. And she gets her revenge on him, and that's enjoyable.
That's in the trailer, too.
Yeah. Oh, is it? Well, there you go, then. You're already going to see that. They just do not – they're not leveled properly with anything else in the film, and they don't end up having really anything to do with the plot.
Right, and
– there's so much they could have done, but they failed in every possible way.
Well, and they failed. Like, there are times when, like, she's, like – Lisbeth Salander, I mean, she's like five steps ahead.
Yeah.
Like when she sets up Lakeith Stanfield to like track her down, and he like goes to like this warehouse where, you know, she's not there. And
yeah,
she
set him up. Him.
And then there are times where she just like makes such stupid decisions.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, which mode is it? Is she like impulsive and doesn't think things through, or she's like this chess master who can, you know, know the move you're going to make before you make it. And it's just, you know, you kind of can't have it both ways. But of course, what happens and the decisions she makes are meant to sort of service the script,
mm-hmm.
And not really have anything to do with, like, they're not like sort of character based. It's like she's stupid if the script calls for it. She's super smart when the script calls for it.
Yeah, just whatever, I guess, they thought worked best with the plot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, but she could have done so much better. That's another reason. It was just disappointment for me.
Oh, it was disappointment for me.
Yeah.
I was, and I had high hopes because I like Fede Alvarez, who did the Evil Dead remake,
which was
better
impressive
than
remake.
It should have been. He did Don't Breathe, which is really great.
If you skip the second Evil Dead and do an Army of Darkness reboot, that'd be sick. Do it.
Yeah, it was, well, get the girl to the deadite dimension or whatever. Yeah. But
I thought his shots in this were okay. Or maybe not the shots, but the setting was okay. It was beautiful.
Oh, it's really well done. But, I mean, at the same time, the look of this movie would not exist without Fincher's Dragons, because it seems
right. Does it rip off from that a bit?
Yeah, it borrows fairly heavily from that sort of, like, Stark kind of.
Yeah, but her flashback and where her father lived is quite impressive. I was just enjoying looking at it.
Yeah.
But that is such a minor thing. It is not...
The minor thing I had was, like, there are so many, like, hideouts where they're in winter, like, Sweden in the winter, but they're in so many hideouts where there are holes in the walls and the ceiling. That seems like a big oversight.
Yeah.
Like, if you're, like, in, you know, Mojave, California, you can have a house, like, a hideout without a roof.
Yeah,
but
not here.
Probably not in suburban Stockholm.
No.
But...
doing that in Canada's winter would be stupid. So there especially, yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that, again, minor gripe, but long story short, disappointing.
Very disappointing, yeah.
Maybe the Grinch was the better call.
I don't know about that. I love Boris Karloff and Jim Carrey, but yes, you don't need to see this film. You don't need to see it.
That's, I think we'll cut that out.
I feel bad. I wanted to like it, but yeah. You don't need to see it.
Although, if someone were to, like, take Claire Foy... take this idea and do something good with it, I would be down for that.
They could just do another soft reboot, but just keep her as the main character.
Yeah.
That'd
be fun. Get rid of Blomqvist. Get rid of, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
because with all the other bad actors, even if this continues on and they make her character better, I'm not going to be able to fully enjoy it.
Give Claire Foy more work. I can get behind that 100%.
Yeah. Kill off the journalist.
I don't even need to kill him off. I just, like, I don't need to see him anymore.
He doesn't even deserve a kill.
How many writers are there in Sweden that she can work with? Probably quite a few.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll leave that there. Just a reminder about raise your voice. Go to cfru.ca/donations to learn more. Anything you can give would be appreciated. You can listen to End Credits again on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. Find us on social media at End Credits Radio Show on Facebook and End Credits Radio on Twitter and Peter.
As per usual, Mr. Tarak, Twitter and YouTube. And that's it.
Short, sweet, to the point.
Oh yeah,
you need more things to plug. You need talk to Candace about like getting more active on, you know, things and plug things. Yeah. And
I'll think of some politics stuff. Spew that out.
Don't work my side of the street. I'll be back here on CFRU tomorrow at 5 p.m. for Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson, or go to GuelphPolitico.ca. Stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here next week for more End Credits. And we will see you then.